Welcome to this week's edition of the headlines from CKUT's Community News Collective in Montreal. Information that matters from our neighborhood to the world. Produced in collaboration with the Dominion. We are broadcasting from Montreal and rebroadcasting on stations throughout Canada and the U.S. These are the headlines for the week of March 9th, 2009. I'm David Koch. We begin with news from Montreal.
On Sunday, several thousands of people participated in the annual International Women's Day March in downtown Montreal. Organized by the Committee of Women of Diverse Origins, the rally brought together a wide range of local and international issues under a uniting demand for a new world order. Thus, they called for an end to imperialism, exploitation, war, occupation, and repression. CKUT was on scene as Dolores Chu, member of the organizing committee, concluded this year's demonstration.
Wherever we are, we have also learned that organizing and resistance does pay off, that it is only by organizing and resistance that we have made the world a better place, and we will continue to make the world a better place. And so whether we are Indigenous women on Turtle Island at barricades and defending our land, or whether we are Palestinian women, where every day of survival is an act of resistance, or whether we are Tamil women, or whether we are migrant workers, we know that our struggles are what makes the world a better place, what makes change possible. And as we leave today to go back and continue celebrating, and as we go back to our workplaces and our colleges and our educational institutions and in the street, we should take this message of hope and defiance and resistance as we say, long live International Women's Day. Nari Ekta Zindabad. So solidarite avec les femmes du monde entier.
The student newspaper, the McGill Daily, reports that McGill University will purchase the Four Points Sheridan Hotel on Sherbrooke and Elmer. The hotel plans to be closed by April 17th, which gives the university time to ready the building for student residents in fall 2009. While purchasing negotiations have been underway, workers at the hotel who are card-holding members of the Confédération des Syndicats Nationaux, or CSN, and the Syndicat des Travailleurs en Télécommunication, or STT, have been on strike since August 25th. The Sheridan Hotel workers are protesting management at the hotel, which a union official calls, quote, one of the worst employers in the hotel industry, end quote. Neither McGill University nor the management of the Sheridan Four Points have publicly confirmed whether the purchase will be going through, but the hotel has refused to take reservations after April 17th, and the employees have anonymously concurred that the hotel will close. A representative of the STT, Fustel Dussus, said in a French press release that his union will not retreat, but seeks to a, quote, good collective agreement, and we will have one, end quote.
And now for national news. An outspoken medical doctor who formerly worked in a First Nations community located downstream from the Alberta oil sands is calling for a slowdown in the development of the controversial industrial project. Dr. John O'Connor was formerly the only primary care physician for the Fort Chipewyan First Nation. He attracted controversy after stating that the oil sands are linked to elevated cancer rates among people living in Fort Chipewyan. His statements prompted Health Canada officials to file a complaint against him, putting his medical license in jeopardy. The advocacy group Environmental Defense called this an attempt to, quote, shut him up and shut him down, end quote. O'Connor spoke to CKUT's Ryan Young recently.
The community, the bulk of the community, depends on traditional foods for its nutrition. Simply not being able to afford the fly-in processed foods that communities for south of Fort Chip rely on, and they notice the change, especially the elders. Based on that and the community's commissioned study, which was revealed in November 2007 and showed appalling levels of arsenic, mercury and hydrocarbons, there is certainly a suspicion that there may be a connection between what's happening upstream and the health of the community of Fort Chip.
In addition to increased rates of cancer, Fort Chip locals have reported environmental changes, including deformed fish and animals. In 2006, a study by Alberta health officials downplayed the concerns of Fort Chipewyan residents. However, a study released last month contradicted Alberta's 2006 report. Here again is Dr. John O'Connor.
The 2009 study, which was released a couple of weeks ago, confirmed a 30% higher cancer rate in the community. And the actual presenter of that report stated that the 2006 report was wrong to give the community the all clear.
The tar sands have come under increasing criticism in Canada and abroad as Aboriginal and environmental groups have called for a moratorium on new oil sands projects.
According to projections released this month from Natural Resources Canada, mining in northern Canada is in sharp decline this year. Experts at the federal government say that Nunavut investment will decline from $279.3 million spent in 2008 to $168.2 million for 2009, but that the decline will be the most severe in the Northwest Territories, declining from $133.1 million spent in 2008 to an estimated $28.4 million projected for this year. These estimates are the amount of money needed to explore and develop initial plans for mines. As the CBC reports, these figures encompass the financial investment needed to fund, quote, early exploration efforts to the completion of a feasibility study for a proposed mine, end quote. This news comes as the government announces plans to continue a 15% tax credit to junior mining companies in an effort to ease their access to capital for funding these initial stages of mine development. Natural Resources Canada's website claims that the tax break will help, quote, maintain investor interest in Canada's mining sector, which is a mainstay of the national economy, end quote.
This news follows a landmark conference at York University last week entitled Rethinking the Extractive Industry, Regulation, Dispossession, and Emerging Claims. The conference brought together civil society from around the world to discuss the social and environmental impacts of the Canadian mining industry. Topics included the Canadian Free Mining Law, First Nations land rights, and the regulation of Canadian mining companies overseas.
Court proceedings are ongoing for four Halifax activists who claim to have been brutalized by police at a march in June 2007. They were among 400 people protesting the Atlantic Gateway, also known as Atlantica, a proposed regional free trade agreement that they say would harm maritime provinces. 21 individuals were arrested at the protest and spent 3 days in jail. While most will not face legal proceedings, the four defendants face charges of carrying weapons, wearing masks with intent, unlawful assembly, and resisting arrest. They say charges against them should be dismissed based on the extreme violence they faced at the hands of police while being arrested and jailed. One of the defendants, George Daly, says, quote, "I saw police hitting other people, pepper spraying, tasers were drawn. It was an intense and intimidating situation before the arrest. I told the officers, I'm not resisting arrest, not trying to be violent. I was rolled onto my stomach, hands behind my back. I was choked, fingers were jabbed into my neck. I said, don't do this to me, I'm losing consciousness, don't do this to me. And I continued saying this until I lost consciousness." End quote. In jail, they were denied basic rights. For example, the 21 detainees were given only a power bar and bottle of water to sustain them in a 24-hour period. During the 18 months since their arrest, the defendants have been effectively silenced by restrictions on their civil liberties. They have been legally forbidden from attending any public protest or associating with one another outside the trial preparations. According to lawyer Vaughn Barnett, the defendants were coerced into agreeing to these conditions while undergoing mistreatment in jail. March 15th marks the International Day Against Police Brutality.
The Toronto Stock Exchange and the Canadian junior mining company Copper Mesa are being sued for $1 billion by two villagers from the Andean Mountains of Ecuador. The suit names the Canadian mining company Copper Mesa for being responsible in subjecting the entire village to violence, threats, and intimidation in preparation for the Canadian company's planned open pit copper mine. The Ecuadorians are also naming the Toronto Stock Exchange as a defendant for its role in arranging financing for the Canadian mining company, even after the exchange had been warned of the risk of violence from the mining company's local tactics. On Wednesday, March 4th, Marcia Ramirez and Carlos Zarrilla announced the launch of a lawsuit to show that lax laws and regulations in Canada allow Canadian mining companies to cause serious harm all over the world without adequate legal accountability. Carlos Zarrilla described the efforts of the Ecuadorian villagers and what they have faced from the Canadian mining company since 2004.
We've been fighting mining development. We've decided this is not what we want for our community. But then when the Canadian mining company showed up in Copper Mesa in 2004, we had to confront a very aggressive set of tactics meant to destroy the opposition to the copper mine. The tactics got progressively more aggressive, more violent against opposition leaders, and that included myself.
In addition to pursuing a major legal action, the Ecuadorian villagers have been pressing for Canadian law reform. Local Ecuadorian leaders are arguing for ecologically sound local development instead of foreign-invested open-pit mining on their land, and all net proceeds from the legal claim will be devoted to ecological and human rights causes.
And now for international headlines.
Foreign petroleum companies, including Canadian oil company Talisman Energy, have been ordered by Peru's top court to cease oil exploration in the San Martin province. The legal challenge emerged from complaints by environmentalists that the companies were in violation of a law that protects an environmentally sensitive area and that the work would cause serious water pollution. This environmentally sensitive area overlaps Lot 103, the site being explored by Talisman and the two other companies from Brazil and Spain. The companies will be permitted to complete the final stage of exploration, provided they offer detailed information on how they plan to minimize environmental damage.
After 3 weeks of trying with various delegations to enter the blockaded Gaza Strip, Montreal engineer and journalist Ihab Latoyev was finally able to exit the Egyptian portion of the border crossing and enter into Gaza with a delegation named Code Pink that included several other Canadians. Ihab made it quite clear that it was not the people of Gaza who had been the obstacle of delegations not being able to enter into the war-torn strip. Rather, the problem for these delegations lied somewhere else.
I should call it exit from Egypt, actually, because allowed entrance erroneously portrayed the situation as Gaza does not let them in, while the obstacle is placed at the exit point from Egypt. That is where all delegations had been stuck and could not proceed beyond.
The 60-member Code Pink delegation, which crossed into Gaza on March 7th, was invited to the region by the Gender Initiative of the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, a program dedicated to promoting the rights of girls and women in the Gaza Strip. In addition, Egyptian First Lady Suzanne Mubarak, chairman of the Egyptian Red Crescent and president of the National Women's Committee, communicated her blessing of the mission through the Red Crescent team that escorted the delegation through the crossing. The Code Pink delegation, which is meeting with social service organizations and delivering more than 1,000 gift baskets to Gazan women, includes novelist Alice Walker and Craig and Cindy Corey, parents of 23-year-old Rachel Corey, an American who was struck and killed 6 years ago this month by an Israeli bulldozer while she was trying to block the demolition of a Palestinian home in Gaza. As for Montrealer Ihab, who is also a well-known local poet and activist, he is hoping to establish foundations and connections for other Quebec and Canadian individuals and groups to visit Gaza in similar solidarity and witness trips.
Israeli Apartheid Week took place in cities and on campuses around the world last week. This series of events aimed at supporting, quote, full equality for Arab-Palestinian citizens of Israel, an end to the occupation and colonization of all Arab lands, including the Golan Heights, the occupied West Bank, and East Jerusalem and the Gaza Strip, and dismantling the wall, end quote, according to apartheidweek.org. The website also called for, quote, the protection of Palestinian refugees' right to return to their homes and properties as stipulated in UN Resolution 194, end quote. Israeli Apartheid Week, or the IAW, attracted controversy at Canadian universities, including Carleton, the University of Ottawa, and the University of Toronto, where certain posters promoting IAW events were banned. Alan Borovoy of the Canadian Civil Liberties Association criticized Carleton University for restricting freedom of speech by taking down the posters, according to the Toronto Star. And according to the Israeli newspaper Haaretz, the organization B'nai B'rith Canada not only called the week's events a hate fest, but also said it should be banned.
In his address at McGill University, keynote speaker for the IAW events, Ronnie Kasrils, former Minister of Intelligence for South Africa's ANC government, described exactly why spaces for dialogue, such as the one provided by Israeli Apartheid Week, were necessary.
People have the right, in a world where there's a multitude of wrongs and injustice, people have a right to decide from their own perspective and position what rankles most in their minds and in their emotions. So there was something about apartheid that people found absolutely revolting. It was a revulsion. It's the taste of human being, their conscience, and what they smell, their senses pick up, that makes people more and more now find Israelis' policy absolutely obnoxious.
Six major American news organizations issued a joint statement yesterday calling on Iran to release Roxana Saberi, an independent journalist who holds dual American-Iranian citizenship. Ms. Saberi was detained in Tehran in late January by Iranian authorities for reasons which have not been made public. Her detainment was learned by her family 1 month later and revealed to the media on March the 1st. The news organizations NPR, ABC, Fox, BBC, PBS, and The Wall Street Journal are requesting that access to Ms. Saberi be permitted in order to ascertain the conditions in which she is held, that the charges against her be made public, and, if no charges exist, that she be released and allowed to return to the United States.
Thank you for listening. Those are this week's headlines. Our broadcasts are available for download every week at cketnews.wordpress.com. And you can read more news from the grassroots at dominionpaper.ca. Thanks this week to our friends at the Dominion and our contributors, Annabelle Koo, Juniper Belshaw, Leah Gardner, Laura Glowacki, David Koch, Brody McRae, Lauren Liu, and all the people at the CKUT News Collective. I'm TJ Kahn. To contact us, email headlines@ckut.ca or call 514-448-4041 extension 6788. Thanks again for listening.